and welcome to another episode of Such Stuff, the podcast from Shakespeare's Globe. This month, we've been celebrating LGBTQ plus History Month. It's never been more important for everyone, but in particular schools, to celebrate, educate and participate in LGBTQ plus History Month. Now, before she became our esteemed head of learning, Lucy Cuthbertson was a drama teacher in secondary schools and a champion for LGBTQ plus rights, visibility and education in the schools she worked in. This, of course, involved celebrating LGBTQ plus History Month, but also embedding anti-homophobia work throughout the year, through the curriculum, through her teaching, and through creating a safe space in drama for her students to express themselves. So to remind us of how important this anti-homophobia work is and the hugely formative impact it's had and continues to have on the lives of teenagers, Lucy caught up with 8 former students, all from the same school, a Southeast London comprehensive, to discuss their myriad experiences of being LGBTQ plus in school. Later in the episode, Lucy chats to Dr. Ellie Barnes, the chief executive and founder of charity Educate and Celebrate, to find out more about the latest work her charity is doing in schools to ensure they're inclusive environments for everybody. Lucy and Ellie have both been working in educational spaces as educators, teachers, activists, and champions of LGBTQ plus rights for years, and together they reflect on how far we've come and what else there is still to do to make schools as inclusive as possible. First up, here's Lucy and 8 of her former students catching up.
Hello, Ellie.
Hello, Miss Cuthbertson.
No. So, hello, Theo.
Hello. Nice to see you.
Hello, Holly.
Hello, Lucy.
Hello, Ellie.
Hello, Lady Cuthbertson. Good to see you again.
Thank you. I do like that title. So, welcome, Jacob and Billy.
Thank you for having us.
So, Noah, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Pebbles.
Hello.
So, thank you very much for doing this. And I'm going to start off straight in there with a question, which is, how do you define yourself?
I define myself as a lesbian. That's just how I've seen myself for a long time. And I don't feel there's any need to kind of change that. I don't feel that my feelings have changed in any way. It kind of just defines who I am and how I see myself.
I would say I was a gay woman. So I don't necessarily say lesbian, I would say gay woman. I don't have anything wrong with the word lesbian, but I always just say, oh, I'm gay. And I don't know why, I think it's just how I prefer to say it.
Just in general, I usually say gay. I don't mind people saying lesbian. But if I'm very informal, I usually just say gay. I'm a gay person. But usually a lot of people find it strange when I don't say lesbian in terms of gender. So I kind of always go for the gay.
I suppose the way I would describe my identity is pretty simple. I'm a gay man, and I don't think there was ever much difficulty around that, around identifying myself. And I know that it might not always be so simple for some people, but I think for me it was pretty straightforward.
I am a queer trans man. I guess, you know, being transgender is a thing that is slowly becoming more widely known. Obviously, the word queer is not so, because I understand that it was a derogatory word. But to me, at least, it basically means that I am some point on the queer spectrum, and I just don't know how to put a specific label on it yet. So as of now, I'm going by queer.
I'd say, yeah, gay, queer, a big queer gay, a big queer.
Gay. I'd say gay. Homosexual is probably what I would say. If someone asked me, I'd say I'm a homosexual.
So that's really funny, because earlier on in an interview, we were talking about the word homosexual. And for me, I said I tend not to use that because it smacks of the 1950s.
I think maybe it's like the distance in time makes it feel sort of quaint and ironic for me, whereas you're too close to it.
How very dare you?
You know, it's weird. I think most of the time I identify just as queer, because it's like more of an umbrella term, I think, that I just use, especially if I'm talking to straight people or like maybe slightly homophobic people. I like to use queer because it's confusing. But I guess I'm bisexual or pansexual. I don't really know. I'm that.
What do you mean when you say queer is confusing?
The way that it's been used historically, I think, like when it was a slur against gay men specifically, and then they reclaimed queer. Like, I think gay men can be queer, lesbian women can be queer, bisexual people can be queer, people who are not quite sure can be queer. But I think it's a word that's all-encompassing, and that's why I like using it, and it's confusing for other people. My parents find it odd that I call myself queer because it's they see it as a slur, but I don't, because I know it is a slur in certain contexts, but I don't see it as that. It's been reclaimed enough now, I think.
Words are really interesting, aren't they? Because I think I would use lesbian to describe myself, which feels the most accurate fit with who I think I am. And then gay second. Yeah, I'm fine with gay. I would use gay if I want to be less frightening.
Really?
And there's something about... Yeah, I think lesbian can frighten some people off. I guess it's about being inclusive, which therefore leads to greater nuance, greater a number of words and identifications, doesn't it? In terms of going through school and thinking in terms of inclusivity, what are your memories and your experience from that time?
I remember very clearly, like, each LGBT History Month having, like, a big whole school assembly with, like, teachers who are out or students who are out or people in the school who had LGBT family members. I think because we had it basically every year, I guess, like, me and, like, my friends who are also out, for them it becomes such a thing. It's like, yeah, X is gay, X is lesbian, who cares? And, like, for the younger kids, especially year 7s and 8s, having an assembly so explicitly about and focusing on LGBT people in the school would have been a bit like something that's probably a bit taboo that they haven't really spoken about before. Because I think the school created such a safe environment for queer students to come out. Like, lots of my friends came out quite early to me, I think, compared to, like, people who I met at uni. Lots of people, they said that their friends, nobody came out at school because it just they were too scared. I just feel like it became so normalised that I think it's amazing that I felt like that. I had such a shock when I went to uni and I talk about my experience at school and my friends at uni would be like, how do you know so many gay people? You probably do, actually, but they just weren't able to come out or, like, feel safe around you and at your school. I think it also did teach the kids that, like, yeah, it's not like an isolated community. LGBT people are your best friends, your teachers, your friend's dad, like... They're everywhere, and that's absolutely fine.
School, for me, as a gay man, and dealing with becoming aware of that, coming to terms with that, realising that, I think was a relatively smooth and positive experience. I think there's always going to be hiccups, and it's always going to be a challenge, not necessarily because of school or where you are, but probably because of just the culture that we're in, the society that we're in.
So both of you, I would describe, if I had to describe the Beswick brothers, the main thing that comes to mind is that you both just unapologetically yourselves. Would that be a fair summary?
I think it would be a fair summary for Billy. I don't know if it would be a fair summary for me. I'm glad that I came across like that. And I sort of don't really want to burst the bubble that's what it was like. I remember a lot of, like, stories where I was kind of, like, very confused and a bit ashamed at points. And also people not making me feel very comfortable and finding that quite difficult. That's my memory up to about maybe year 9. But, like, at that time anyway, all that you would get would be negative, really. So you weren't really aware of what your sexuality was. You just knew that people were calling you this negative thing. And you didn't want to be associated with it. I was scared all the time. And I don't really think I said it publicly until I was, like, 16. And literally there was reason to be scared. Like, I've got lots of memories of being, like, hit and being chased. And it, especially at that time anyway, it was not an environment where if I had said I was gay, there wouldn't have been repercussions for that. Because even just appearing gay, to be honest, sometimes I do think, if I had been more comfortable and had felt like there wasn't anything wrong with it and had put that across and been quite sturdy and confident about it, by you not being comfortable with yourself and people saying stuff to you and then that like hurting, and you then it makes you even less comfortable with yourself. It just, it's like a spiral of shame and confusion for a big queer gay like me.
It never felt like something that I had to do for myself. Like, and I never really came out, but I do remember when I was 13, I remember thinking, oh, you're definitely gay, but you don't have to tell everyone because you're only 13. And then I remember being in, were we in year 11 when we made that video where we spoke about gay members of our family, and it was an assembly. It was part of like the whole push towards like more inclusivity in the school, and people, staff and students spoke about whether or not they had gay siblings. And I spoke about my lesbian sister and my queer gay brother. And I remember at the end of the interview, you said, do you want to say anything about your sexuality? And I remember saying, no. And the reason I said no was because I didn't really yet want to be... It's like I knew to myself what I was, but I wasn't like yet at a point where I wanted to like be in the world that way. And then a couple of years later, we did another video where staff and students who were gay spoke about whether or not they were born that way. And I said something very cringeworthy about Lady Gaga, but then I did speak about it. But it wasn't really a process of like being in shame and then not being in shame. It was more a process of like being private and then being public, if that makes sense.
I was not out at school. I probably didn't come out officially until I was about 18, 19 years old. It was sort of when I got to university, I started having a bit more of a freedom and a bit more understanding of my sexuality in a whole. I always knew that I wasn't completely straight, but didn't really understand what that sort of meant. Maybe I was just going, the whole going for a phase thing. And obviously I was a lot, well, the term butcher than the rest of the girls. I think that's when I started to sort of understand more, especially with the group of people that I knew at school, who I was, you know, hanging out with Holly, Pebbles. That helped me come out a lot more when I was older. But understanding who I actually was, I was always very much trying to please people. I was always a lot more feminine to make other people happy and to avoid a lot of questions. But I felt like I wasn't confused with my sexuality, I was just confused with my identity more. So I suddenly realised that it wasn't such a bad thing being that like butcher the way I was, more masculine. Obviously, I cut off all my hair, and that's always felt like that was waiting. There was this person waiting to make me feel so much more comfortable.
And can you talk to me a little bit about how, during the course of being in secondary school, your identity has changed, has shifted? Because when I knew you, you would have been labelled a girl. So I'm just interested in your own personal journey through secondary school.
It was a crazy one. I went through a multitude of identities at that point, which is fine. You know, we're meant to question and stuff like that. I thought I was non-binary at the time. I knew that I wasn't cis since I came into secondary school, but I kept it mostly closeted because I didn't know how they would react. I realized that I was trans. God, I was... must have been in year 9, year 10-ish. It was a crazy journey of trying to figure myself out. And I was less open about my gender identity, I guess, than my sexual identity, which also has fluctuated. A lot of things helped me, and I think I grew up at a point where things were... I'm not going to say they were all right, because they're not all right even today, but they were better than how other people grew up. When you grow up in a heteronormative state, you immediately assume that they're going to be distasteful towards it and they're not going to accept you for who you are. It's hard looking at yourself while trying to hide yourself. And I tried my best to be who I was. And, you know, I'm extremely lucky that I have parents who support me because they let me go through those stages. I thought I was bisexual at a few times. I thought I was pan for a few years. You know, it's been a journey. I think I'm lucky with the support system I had with school, which is kind of astonishing. They helped a lot, especially with my gender identity. When I came out as trans, they, you know, they even helped me pick out my name. It, like, because of some teachers who were there, they also supported my parents through it because they weren't, you know, they weren't calling me by my name or my pronouns at the time. But, you know, they had a meeting with them and they were like, listen, this is Noah, this is who he is. Please accept that, which really helped. There's the teachers and, you know, who go through it and, like, who help you. But then there's also the students of the school. They were, when I came out, you know, there were, I was given transphobic slurs. They were like, oh, well, you're not really a guy, are you? Or they were like, I'm just going to call you by your dead name. And I got hurt. I would say my experiences at school were more positive than most, even though I have those negative aspects that I still carry to this day. I think I need to count myself as lucky because I know some other stories from people who didn't get any support and who were still dealing through that trauma. And because that is what it is. It's trauma, not knowing where your school stands and then realizing that, oh, my school stands against me. It's trauma.
I feel like from a very early age, I knew kind of that I particularly fancied women, and that it was from probably about the age of 12, I think. And I think I was probably out to my friends from probably about the age of 13, 14. And I think that from what I've spoken to, even my partner, being out that early is quite unheard of around the people that who didn't go to our school. But within our school, it was pretty normal that people were discovering themselves about that time and then were quite open about discovering themselves. Whereas I think other people didn't have that experience. I think that we were a lot more aware of ourselves in our school and a lot more aware of different types of sexuality and just really discovering ourselves and being who we wanted to be. We kind of created our own little community, especially within drama.
I was probably given more opportunity than I even took to do that playing through the work that we did together in drama, but also more widely, I think, through the work that you'd done to kind of infiltrate the rest of the school with your homosexual agenda.
Oh, I love that. Thank you, Theo. What an accolade. Looking back at your time in school, what were the most informative moments or experiences regarding your sexuality or things you particularly remember?
I think probably whenever you went into the drama space, it was always a learning experience anyway, because it was sort of like this safe gay haven of the school. And then within that, like, you could talk freely and then you would learn something. And you yourself, Lucy, you were so well versed, and like, I remember learning about Stonewall, and I remember learning about like the history and what it meant to so many people to be able to go out and do these things. And just within the productions of that we put on as well, it's like sort of like using that as an extra safe space to confront people who may have had bigoted views, that actually it is good, it is fun. Like, what was it, Romeo and Juliet, when I think we all the women dressed up as men and all of the men dressed up as women, and we just had like this weird party and everyone just came in, they cross-dressed, they had a great time, they listened to weird music, and then everyone went off and they felt better for themselves and a bit brighter, I guess.
I don't like to brag, but I think we were quite a good cohort in terms of drama, and we kind of started that little community, and then that kind of grew. There was this big gaggle of about 50 kids that probably turned up to drama who were just able to kind of be who they wanted to be, and it doesn't matter if somebody kind of stuck out, because then it was all right, because that was kind of what we liked and kind of how we expressed ourselves. And I think that that freedom to do that within school, it just made people understand each other more and be more willing to accept each other, which was really nice to see. And so by the time I left, it was like this big mishmash of crazy kids who were just really happy, I think. Whereas in some schools, they just are so in themselves and they don't get to express themselves, and they're so caught up in how they're being seen that they can't be themselves.
yeah, like obviously when we were doing GCSE and A-level drama, you made a conscious effort to like have plays that tackled LGBT issues and by queer writers, like Angels in America. Yeah, also even if they weren't plays with explicit themes, like LGBT themes, we also had like cross-dressing and like in Romeo and Juliet and in Lysistrata, like I basically did drag at school, so that's cool.
I think the play that really did it for me with feeling how comfortable I was Lysistrata, actually, where, you know, we swapped the boys playing the women and the girls playing the men. And that, you know, again, that sort of made me question, well, I feel very comfortable in this huge army gear and not having to wear a skirt. Or it was, you're a leader of an army. And I was like, yes, finally. I would say Lysistrata was the one that made me go, aha, yes. Now I can really be my masculine butch self.
Yeah, I mean, I know my perception of both of you was obviously quite particular to drama and the productions we did, but you were both just so up for anything and more. So whatever you were asked to do, it would then end up with gold shimmer. I mean, what was the first production you were in, Billy? Was it something like Ruckus in the Garden, where...
I think I was painted completely gold.
That's right. And Jacob, if we think back to when you were in Galatea, what was your outfit?
I was playing Diana, the goddess of chastity and the hunt. And you were like, I think that she should be a nun and be very chaste. And I was like, no, she's got to be really, really sexual. So I ended up wearing like a skin-coloured, skin-tight, bejewelled number that only covered half of my chest. And then the other half of my chest was exposed and I had nothing but a gold nipple tassel.
This is why I think it's bemusing that either of you thought you might be possibly heterosexual.
And I was so ashamed.
So I think this is an ongoing theme, isn't it? Of you taking perfectly good heterosexual plays and just making them into queer productions.
I think about this a lot. I never, ever, ever really, although in Ruckus in the Garden I was Cupid, I was a man, but I never really enjoyed in my fantasy life, either as a child or once I started doing drama, I never wanted to play a man. It wasn't something I was interested in doing. It didn't feel like it somehow felt dishonest.
Are there kind of good memories about being able to be yourself, or do you look back on it and do a bit of a shudder?
It is mixed feelings, I think. I definitely reflect on everything that I did in the drama department as an absolute joy and something that was really unusual. I absolutely loved that. And then on the flip side, I just didn't really like school. I don't know, it all felt a bit uncomfortable.
No, I loved school. I always talked to everyone all the time. Maybe this hasn't come across. I loved school. I loved drama. But I also liked school generally. I found my peers funny. I found, even if like it wasn't always easy to navigate being with them, I really enjoyed school. But I do think part of the reason that I enjoyed school so much was the like release valve of having the drama hall. When we weren't doing productions, sometimes I would read Harry Potter in the library alone. But I did have a nice time.
If school were a microcosm metaphor for the outside world, the drama hall was like a big gay bar. It actually was kind of a utopia, like away from all of the like judgment.
What should practical things that teachers can do, other than saying we accept everyone, everyone is equal, how do you make that happen?
Obviously it depends on the subject you're teaching and the nature of the class, but I think one of the main things, for me at least, would be to A, do what my teacher did, ask for your pronouns, you know, and accept that. If there is someone in your class who identifies as LGBTQ+, listen to them. Let them talk to you, let them complain to you if there's anything going on. And, you know, if someone says, hey, people are bullying me because of my identity, you know, take action. And make sure other people understand that homophobia, transphobia, biphobia, acephobia, it's not okay, it's not a cool trend. It's genuinely hurtful, and it leads people to question themselves and, you know, hate themselves for a long time. You know, it is really detrimental for people's mental health.
You're absolutely right, and the statistics are really frightening, aren't they? So it must feel that gender comes up all the time in a way that doesn't relate to you in every class, in every textbook. It must be a constant stream of inappropriate gender references that don't represent you.
Yeah, it's a constant struggle. It's always a cis normative idea, and it's always binary. It's always within the binary, which is horrible.
You know, did you see yourself reflected in lessons in the curriculum outside of drama where you felt safe?
It's important to have representation, partly because having representation will force you as a teacher to think about things in a more complicated way. If you're not gay or trans or bisexual, or if you're not LGBTQ, then there's just going to be certain ingrained patterns of thinking that you might not even be aware of that can feel quite excluding. Having representation, it isn't even really for the purpose of so that I would have someone, oh, you know, Alan Turing was gay, I could be a computer scientist. It's more that if you have a curriculum that includes representation, you're going to be forced to think about your own ingrained thinking and complicate your thinking a bit more.
So just to finish off, if you were going to go along to a PGCE course, initial teacher training course, and talk to teachers who are in training, who are about to go into schools, what advice would you be giving them about how to create an inclusive school that they're part of?
It's about being confident in yourself, about being open as who you are, and then once you have created a place where you feel like you can be who you are and open, then you can look to move that down into the school. And I think that showing kids that it's okay to be who you are first, doesn't matter if you're talking about sexuality or whatever, I think is creating that culture first in school, and then you'll get from that who needs the support and where, and from that you'll get those kids who don't know how to identify themselves as who they are and their sexuality, and from that then you can start creating that support unit that they need, because everybody needs a little bit of support, doesn't matter who you are. Because I'm a teacher now, and teaching my school, some teachers don't feel they can necessarily be themselves or give away too much of themselves to students. Some people like really hold back from being who they are at school, but if you are more open about that with kids, then it gets them to understand that there are different people in the world. And I think in our school, people were very open about kind of who they were, which meant that it was okay for us to be like that. And I think you learn so much from your teachers about people rather than just the lessons they're teaching.
I would say to continue trying to provide sort of the safe spaces. Naturally, students will gravitate to the teachers they feel get them, as long as there's the pocket and of teachers that are willing to create those spaces. At least there's several different outlets for a student to go to if needed. And maybe to dedicate a bit more time to the history, because I only learnt that from yourself. There needs to be more inclusion, feminist movements, gay movements, black history, that there needs to be a broader spectrum taught in schools so that nobody is left out, and yeah, just to help create the safe spaces for the people that need it.
I think this understanding that gay, homosexuality, LGBTQ people, transgender people especially, and non-binary people have always been around. It's not this new thing that's come into the world. These people have always been there. There's just been no light shone to recognise that. I think what I would have liked was just teachers saying it as just the norm.
Don't step around the subject. I think talking about it in just the most frank way you can. Don't make it so serious that it becomes unapproachable, but not skirt around the subject. Like, everyone's going to mess up. They are young and they're finding out about these subjects for the first time, often in school. And they're going to say maybe clumsy things, but a lot of it will just be coming from curiosity. And I think just to give kids straight answers and respect their intelligence, even though they are young. Don't hide things and cloak them behind some mysterious, like, this is a hush-hush subject, because then kids are just going to be more and more interested. They're going to find out from bad sources and find out bad information and wrong information. But if you give them a solid, straight to it, full of facts and reality education about LGBT issues and people, they're just going to be like, okay.
If I was to be parachuted into a teacher training course and give my advice about how to support LGBT students and non-LGBT students for that matter, I think I would use the government's coronavirus advice and say, act like you've got it, act like everyone might be act like everyone might be LGBT. And I think it's so much, it's about role models and it's about just normalizing, because I think that everything else in our culture is saying, you know, is not necessarily, you know, there's lots of things in the culture that are very, very pro-LGBT rights. But I think still, like, all of the narratives, all of the things that we grow up on are so based around heteronormative shit. If you're a teacher and you've got an opportunity to talk to, like, 100 kids a week or more, then be one of the people that's helping to unpack that. Because, and if that's by just referencing history, referencing, and it goes also for other marginalised groups, referencing the stories that are relevant to more than just the straight folk. If it's science, talking about scientists and all of that stuff, you know, I just think it has to be kind of, it just has to be in the groundwork of everything, because otherwise we just keep walking through life thinking there's one way of being, which is so not the case.
I think we should finish there. That was beautiful.
Next up, Lucy sat down with Dr. Ellie Barnes to discuss her experience in schools, first as a teacher, and now as the chief executive and founder of Educate and Celebrate. Ellie set up the charity after spending years working in schools and seeing firsthand how much dedicated work is needed to give schools practical help and frameworks to make schools as safe and inclusive as possible for all students. So, here's Lucy and Ellie.
Hi, Ellie.
Hi.
So, you and I first met, but not actually in person, when we were both in a documentary film back in 2008 that was done for a channel called Teachers TV, and we were asked to be in a documentary called Gay Teachers, and it featured, according to the blurb, five inspirational teachers who were out in their schools. So I was going to ask you what your experience was of teaching, and when, if you came out in school, what that experience was like.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you were saying, there wasn't many of us out at that point, was there? I mean, quite incredible to believe that now, because of the jobs that we're both doing now. And we're surrounded by teachers of all different identities. And isn't that a wonderful thing? Then, you know, I think I was very lucky in terms of coming out. I don't think I really had an official coming out in school, because I think I was never in from the get-go. But I think that is me and my personality, because I just believe in being myself, you know, as much as possible in whichever environment I'm in. And particularly, you know, when you're working with young people, because you want them to be themselves too. Because if I can have open and honest relationships with them, then they're going to be open and honest with me. And it really does help. There were several young students in the school, you were really struggling. They had no language around their identities. They had no one to talk to about how they were feeling, difficulty forming friendships and achievement and, you know, just being themselves. And I thought, wow, we're in the 2000s. We really, really should have moved on. You know, Section 28 was repealed in 2003. We should be on a much faster road than the one that we are already. So I really took it upon myself, and I just wanted to put my head above the parapet, you know, and just make sure that I was there as the voice of those young people, because if I didn't do it, those kids, you know, would suffer within the school, and they wouldn't find themselves at school and they couldn't be themselves. And just stopping all the harsh treatment and the bullying and the adversity that was happening around the school. So that was my trigger, really. And of course, yeah, there was staff that wasn't out as well. I mean, it wasn't the sort of environment where they felt that they could be. Gosh, at that point, there were still teachers losing their jobs, of course, which you'll probably remember, because of their gender identity or their sexual orientation.
Yeah, and it was quite a scary prospect for teachers, wasn't it? And I think the culture in schools sort of 15 years ago was, it seemed pretty toxic regarding homophobia. I remember this, that was the sort of your gay kind of cuss was just endemic, I felt, when I started teaching. But the progress, as you say, has been pretty rapid, hasn't it? More and more there are schools and teachers understanding that you cannot have this kind of atmosphere. And some of the work you're doing has obviously been very instrumental with that.
Homophobia, biphobia and transphobia are real, and they're ugly and horrible and devastating things, you know. And I really wanted to create training, a programme that was full of useful resources that everyone could use to make positive change. And I wanted to go into this with a positive message, because I've always found that way the best way and the most successful and effective way. And we're building this future of inclusion and social justice. And I don't think we're going to get there if we just keep telling negative stories about ourselves. Yes, I believe our voices should be telling our stories, all voices from all the different protected characteristics. All those voices should be always at the centre of every single conversation going forwards. But it needs to be partnered with, here are effective tools that you can use going forwards. And these are not for particular members of your organisation who can only do it. This is for absolutely everyone. And I like to empower people to know that they can make change. And if I can change the opinion of one person per day, then I am doing my job. And I like to throw the baton to the next person. So we have a programme where we will start off with interviews with, of course, the young people themselves, with teachers at all different levels and subject areas all over the school, and surveys for everyone to build a picture of what is happening within the school first and identify the areas for immediate change, and then identify all of the areas for long-term sustainable change. Now, as you know, and I've suggested, there's a lot of fear still around this. That is part of the problem, the fear that we are saying the wrong thing, and we don't want to upset anybody. So getting the language right is pretty key at the beginning of the process. We have to bring people on board step by step, and that includes all of the teachers, all of the parents, the governors, trustees, and whoever is a stakeholder within your environment. And of course, then interrogating the curriculum right the way through all key stages and all subjects across the board, and increasing visibility in the environment. A lot of the time, which is quite interesting, the schools will have their first student that is transitioning. So that has given them the impetus to make sure they're getting things right. So they're coming from a place of, we want to do our best for these students. What do we do? And that's when I get a lot of calls from schools who want to start the work. They haven't done it before, but someone's given them a reason to start doing it. And I find that that's good, but can also be quite a negative thing as well, because why weren't you doing it anyway? Because it's in law that we do this, you know. So from the Equality Act 2010, we should be, you know, creating inclusive schools, and we should no longer be in a place where we are troubleshooting.
What was your own school experience like?
Oh gosh, what, in terms of inclusion?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was ever mentioned. I cannot think of one single conversation that I had growing up. It never ever came up in conversation. I think the first chat I had was when I went to uni when I was 18, and someone said to me, oh, you're one of those people, aren't you? I was like, what? What do you mean, one of those? Oh, well, you're like bisexual, aren't you? Or you're queer, or you're lesbian, or you're this or that. I was like, wow, I had never labelled myself before. because I was from the countryside, I guess no one really had ever noticed that I was having relationships with different genders, and I never questioned it, and no one else questioned it either. So I was quite, I guess I come from this the other way around, you know, when I was told, oh, right, okay, you're not heterosexual. And I didn't find that out till I was 18, that I may be different to everyone else. And that's what silence does.
Looking back, was there a single teacher who could have been a role model in your school?
No, absolutely not. I can't think of a single person that was around me at any point growing up. No, absolutely nobody. I mean, no one was telling me that it's right or wrong. I guess the only person on the TV I remember seeing was Martina Navratilova. And she lost her sponsorship because she came out. And then the only other people were like, all these absolute absurd stereotypes.
And it is really interesting to think back to school and to think about anyone who could have potentially been a role model. But obviously we went to school at a time when they would not have been able to be out without, as you say, their jobs being at risk. I think nowadays I do find it frustrating when we have teachers who aren't out. There's all sorts of reasons why they can't be, and it's everyone's individual choice. But if you do nothing else, just being out does a huge amount, doesn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I would always advocate it. I mean, did you feel safe when you came out in your school?
Not particularly, but I did know that I had the support of the senior leadership. I think it just quite happened naturally. I had students regularly for the first couple of months that I was teaching, asking, you know, Miss, are you married? Miss, do you have a boyfriend? Do you have a boyfriend, Miss? Are you married? Do you have a husband? And the questioning went on and on to the point where I thought, interesting that possibly they know. And I knew at some point I would just come out. And in one lesson, a girl said, Miss, do you have a boyfriend? And I just said, no, but I have a girlfriend. And she just went, oh. And then we just got on with the lesson. And that was that. And then slowly it kind of spread through the school, the news. But rarely did I get any direct kind of homophobia for that. Occasionally, but I think once you are out in a quite a strong way, you know, young people don't really have anywhere to go with that, do they? Somebody occasionally would say, lesbian. And I'd be like, yeah, yes, I told you. It's you've taken the power away, haven't you?
That I find that with young people. I found that throughout my entire career. They just want an answer and then go, oh, right, okay, what's next? And that's the beauty about working with young people, isn't it?
No, I agree. They're incredibly open and accepting once you're honest. I think they sniff out dishonesty from 5 miles away. You're, in a sense, as an LGBT teacher, you're almost kind of more comfortable in the school if you're out. We almost used to have these coming out assemblies, which we did as a particular tool, so we would save them up for once a year. And then any staff who either wanted to talk about themselves, or we had staff who would get up and maybe, you know, talk about a very close relative. And it was so powerful, because the students would then, at the end of this assembly where people were talking about their experiences of being LGBT or these people in their lives, the students would look around and realise how many people in the room were involved, how many staff, and that if you are homophobic around the school, you were directly offending somebody, possibly on the same corridor or in your classroom. And it became real. I think it stopped this idea of homophobia being bad as a sort of almost an abstract thing, that it's, as you say, there were those people knew on television, but actually you brought it back to the community. And real people who were hurt by you behaving like that.
And it's good to see, because mostly what you can see is that those ones that are homophobic, biphobic, transphobic are in a minority. And they can see it in front of them because they can see that most people are on side with this. And I think that's a really good lesson to learn, because there's always somebody who will not be on side. Where do those adverse views come from? I'm always trying to analyse that. Kids, as you know, they're not born with prejudice. It's not there, is it? So a lot of my research was done with early years, and you don't see it. So that prejudice is learned. You know, where are we learning that? Because a lot of the time when we get into the teenage years in secondary, which I think me and you were both secondary, weren't we? you know, they've already formed their personalities and their opinions, you know, and if only we could start this earlier on, much earlier from early years in primary, then we wouldn't have to do the troubleshooting within the secondary schools. That's what I found.
There's been some particularly unpleasant reactions to that work in primary schools recently, hasn't there? That it's almost seen as that's more inappropriate.
I mean, sometimes parents, they get the wrong information, and that's really sad. So if we were able to be united in schools with the information that we were sending out, we'd be in a much better place. So if we've got our policies in line saying, well, this is what we do include gender identity and sexual orientation within our RSE, and this is what it looks like. Here's an example of a book that we might be reading. Here's a song we might be singing. And this is a lesson that we might do. And if we had that in a more transparent way on the school websites or centralised even, then we'd be in a much better place, because parents are very, very much part of this process. And of course they're going to panic, and of course they're going to be fearful. They're our generation, if not much younger, and a lot of them didn't have this education when they were at school. So we developed a survey specifically for parents around all of the protected characteristics, you know, not to find out if they agreed that we were including gender identity and sexual orientation within the curriculum, but what help do you need to continue the conversation at home? And we received the most amazing feedback from parents, and it wasn't necessarily around gender identity and sexual orientation. So many were about, I need to know more about race, particularly about the Black Lives Matter movement. I need to know more about faith. So that's when we started providing, you know, more resources specifically for parents around all of the protected characteristics, because it's what was needed.
There's quite a preoccupation at primary school on gender. And I was interested in how the gender and sexual orientation kind of issues combine, and how you've been tackling gender issues, I guess.
Yeah, you know what? There has been a change on emphasis, because when I started, it was all about sexual orientation. And there's almost a feeling now when I go into a school, oh, well, that's been done. And it's all about looking at the roots of all of this, and I think the roots and everything that we do now are all around gender. I mean, we're looking at the bigger issues of sexism, homophobia, transphobia, biphobia, all of these. And if we really think about it, the roots of all of those are in gender, and our thoughts and our perceptions and our stereotypes of gender. So I'm all about, at this moment, eradicating all the heteronormative and cisnormative practices that happen around schools. Do we need to specify gender anymore in everything that we do? Do we need to fill in forms and say our gender? Why are we doing that? What information are we trying to collect, and why are we collecting it? And we'll always start off with male, female, and then move on to another box, maybe that says other. How awful is that? You know, it's that whole othering. You know, if we brought everybody up in this gender-free world, imagine if we went into our early years or nurseries, or as soon as we were born, we weren't subjected to these awful stereotypes around gender. So there were no expectations. So we were just brought up as people.
I did quite a lot of work in the last few years in primary schools, and I find that the focus on gender is huge. It's everywhere within a school. So once you start to look at it, you realize it's everything from behavior management. It's about how we line up boys and girls. It's about uniform, and it's the schools are rare where they have gender neutral uniform. It's so pervasive, and this labeling of being a boy and girl becomes more important actually than anything else you might have in common. It's very restrictive.
Yeah, I completely agree. We want our students to be who they are. We want them to achieve. We don't want to put limitations upon them around their gender. The stories that we read, you know, a lot of them are white characters, white families, mum, dad, you know, and it's really bringing in that level of diversity and inclusion in books. Literature is such a fantastic way to start right from early years.
In the history of teaching LGBT positive messages in school, though, literature and books has been an inflammatory area, hasn't it?
Oh, Oh, it has over the years. Yes, I mean, I think it was part of the reason why Section 28 first came about back in 1988. There was a book called Jenny Lives with Eric and Martin about, of course, about a young person that had two dads. And at the time, that was seen as, wow, the most outrageous and radical piece of literature you could possibly have. Yeah. And of course, off the back of that, Section 28 was brought in, where teachers were not allowed to talk about sexual orientation or gender identity.
I was in middle school, I guess, in the sort of late 80s, mid 80s. And I had a teacher there who was quite a role model for me. Obviously, I didn't know anything about her private life, but there was something about this particular teacher who felt that she didn't quite fall into the usual kind of feminine stereotypes. I looked up Miss Porter and I got back in touch with her. And she'd been married to her girlfriend for 30 years. And she said that Clause 28 at the time was how toxic it was, that she had to sit on meetings about Clause 28 where other staff being dismissed was being discussed. And it was that kind of atmosphere.
I remember when I first started my first job, I was told not to come out. And I was really quite horrified by that. As someone that has never been in, it was quite difficult to be and behave like someone else for my own safety within the school. My heart goes out to all those poor teachers at that time that had to go through that.
That's the difficulty, isn't it? I started teaching a bit later, not straight after university, and I'd spent my 20s doing sort of very queer activities, including I was in a choir called Queer Choir. I was a volunteer counsellor on what was then called Lesbian and Gay Switchboard. Being pretty immersed in the queer community and politics, to then go into school, and I had exactly the conversation you had. Somebody said to me, you know, you don't need to tell anybody else. You don't need to come out. You don't need to do that. I think there was a suggestion that that's private. That's your personal life and it doesn't have a place in a school. And yet students knew loads about other teachers. You know, you brought your husband to the winter fair. You know, everybody met him. You know, you've got a picture of your wife and kids on the desk. Children knew about teachers' private lives. It wasn't that we were being inappropriate. And I think there were other fears from parents and other teachers that in a sense, if you talk about something too much, you are leading students, that you are opening up a world that they wouldn't otherwise know about, that you can make a child gay. I'd heard that phrase before, and obviously this is just a load of nonsense.
Yeah. Now, I've had that all the time. You know, I'm just opening up the conversation around gender and sexual orientation because it's a conversation we all need to have. It's just begun, you know, we're now in a place, you know, where we are relatively safe in our schools right now. Let's hope. That's not everyone, but I would like to think in my heart that they are much safer places than they were 15, 20 years ago.
They are, without a doubt. And I think, you know, the kind of work that you do, the kind of work that Stonewall have been doing with Stonewall Champions in school, that's all been so, so helpful to schools that have struggled to know how to start this work themselves. But then if you can bring in an organisation like yourself or perhaps Stonewall, or use something like the LGBT History Month as a hook, as an anchor, it's helped with that work. So we should just talk a little bit about language. I think for anyone who is new to this kind of work or is wanting to kind of embark on it, one of the barriers sometimes is feeling like you don't know the vocabulary, you don't know the right words to use. Have you found that?
Oh, I find that every single day in this job. And people fall over their words all the time and they will apologise. Oh, I don't know if I said the right thing. We've really moved forward. I mean, I'm using language now that I definitely wasn't using like 15 years ago. So to be inclusive, I guess we're all using the LGBT plus. So the plus and the star. So that means we're including all gender identities and all sexual orientations. And the Q, of course, for queer and questioning. A is being used for asexual and ally, and I intersex. So all are now included within all the different initialisms and acronyms.
Yes, it's it's a much broader vocabulary now, isn't it? It's much more nuanced and it's much more inclusive, really, isn't it?
This is going to continue to change, don't you think? Because we're at a point where we are inventing language, aren't we? Because we are covering all genders as we go along. So we'll know that we've got non-binary identities, gender fluid, and of course there are many, many more, and we have to move with language.
That movement can cause people anxiety, can't it? Because if it changes so quickly, you think you've just got a hang of it and then it's kind of changed again. But that shouldn't be a barrier to starting this work, that anxiety around language or using the right words. It's just something you can pick up, you can learn, can't you?
Absolutely. Oh, wow. You can Google anything these days, of course, and you can always get in touch with organisations like ours. We want to eradicate all of the cisnormative, all heteronormative practices and make room for everyone to make sure that everyone feels represented. I mean, it's just as simple as that. I mean, you know, I don't want to get bogged down in language. I just don't think that's very helpful. As long as we're all accepted and appreciated, acknowledged within our environment, then we're doing really well.
Just to finish off, if there were school leaders, if there are students who are within a school and they know that homophobia is still an issue in that school, homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, what would be your advice to them right now?
Oh, wow. I mean, the first thing that we must start with is, why are people not safe within your environment? What is happening right now? And let's look at the things for immediate change. Now, I would definitely recommend getting in an outside organisation, or I would recommend getting somebody from your staff body trained. And then, of course, having a structured programme. So what training are you laying out each year? Are your policies embedded? Does everyone know about them? Who is doing the work in the curriculum? What can we change in the curriculum? Where can we change it? Where is it needed the most? What's on the walls? Where can young people go for further support? You know, where can staff go? Where can parents go? And, you know, and how and who is making the changes? Is it the staff? Is it the young people themselves? You know, we need the young people's voices on this, which is why we have a massive Pride Youth Network. So groups of young people making positive change, because they are the benefactors, aren't they, of this? They're receiving this education. Their voice needs to be heard.
Thank you, Ali.
My pleasure. Lovely talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Amazing work you do.
And you too. Fantastic. Let's keep it going.
That's it from us, but you can catch up now on the rest of our LGBTQ plus History Month content on our website and on social media. If you are part of a school or educational environment and are interested in improving your approach to creating a positive culture for LGBTQ plus students and staff, and you've been interested in any of the work discussed in the podcast, there are lots of organisations you can contact. Of course, Educate and Celebrate would love to hear from you, and you can find out more details about the work that Ellie and her team do at educateandcelebrate.org. As Lucy mentioned, Stonewall also do extensive work in schools, and you can find out more at stonewall.org.uk. Finally, if any of the issues raised in the podcast have left you wanting to talk to somebody, there are lots of helplines you can contact. Switchboard LGBT is a confidential listening service. You can call on 0300 330 630 between 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. daily, or go online to switchboard.lgbt to instant message the team. You can contact Stonewall's free information service on 0800 050 2020, and lines are open from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday to Friday. You've been listening to Such Stuff with me, Imogen Greenberg. To find out more about Shakespeare's Globe and what's on, follow us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. We'll be back soon with more stories from Shakespeare's Globe, so subscribe wherever you get this podcast from.